Welcome back to First Draft, the only show dedicated exclusively to the NFL draft because Mel Kiper Jr. created this industry. Mel, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Phil. We got a Super Bowl coming up, but we got a lot of draft talk today. That's what people want to hear about. So we haven't covered a couple positions, and I thought this week we could get into maybe a little bit of that, some things that we haven't touched on much during these podcasts. Got a lot of work to do between now and late April. And you have your Mock 1.0 coming out Wednesday, which we're all looking forward to. Phil, I know you're fine-tuning that as we speak while you're in Vegas. You know, check with all your contacts, all your buddies out there to try to get that late information on Mock 1.0, Phil.
Yeah, I'm doing my best here, Mel. You say that we're all looking forward to Mock 1.0. Maybe everybody but me. Everybody but me, right? Because there's a lot of pressure here. You know, I've only rewritten my top 10 19 times. So seems reasonable, right? I mean, it's only my first mock draft for ESPN in professional capacity. So no pressure here. But I do feel like there is, well, obviously there's plenty of attention being paid to the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about the Chiefs and the 49ers and potential needs at picks 31 and 32 in just a moment, Mel. It is cool to see, like, Radio Row, as you know, is filled with people not just from San Francisco and Kansas City, but there are markets all across the country that are here right now in Vegas, and a lot of people want to talk draft because the fan bases of the other 30 teams are already focused on the offseason, which of course is underway in full just about 4 days from right now from when you and I are talking. But you mentioned other positions. We're going to dive into safeties today. Interesting safety class here, Mel. Maybe a first rounder, maybe not. We'll dive into that in just a little bit. But let's start at the top with the Chiefs and the 49ers. They have a game to play on Sunday. We're not trying to look past the Super Bowl, but we can do a little bit of a future forecast. Let's begin with, I'll flip a coin, land on San Francisco. As you examine the possibilities of pick 31 and 32, what kind of areas stand out that San Francisco might need to fine-tune this offseason?
I think the 49ers, you look, they always go heavy defensive line. They made the move for Chase Young. Chase Young hasn't really developed and given them the impact opposite Nick Bosa you would have hoped. Yeah, I think Kinlaw's the free agent. So you think maybe they're always defensive line-centric, but certainly I think right tackle, a little bit upgrade over Colt McKivitz. You think about where they could go there. Amarius Mims from Georgia was the tackle that I gave them at the end of the first round in my Mock 1.0 a few weeks ago, Field. So I think, you know, in the trenches for San Francisco, could add a wide receiver at some point as well, but that offensive a tackle spot, right tackle spot, and a defensive line for San Francisco, I think, are a couple areas they could address.
Yeah, Mel, I was going to say, I hate to take the easy way out, but March always sort of impacts April. We talk about that all the time, but it really impacts April more so for the teams at the back end of the first round, because the reality of teams at the top of the board, right? Like, it's going to be very hard for New England, Washington, teams with picks 3 and 2 to fill all of their needs in free agency. We know they're still going to need to address like offensive tackle and quarterback in New England, offensive tackle and quarterback in Washington. For San Francisco and Kansas City, some of this is going to depend upon things that take place, like players that they release because of cap constraints or players that they add in free agency. But I keep coming back to the offensive line as well for San Francisco. And you mentioned Amarius Mims in your first round mock draft. We feel like the strength of this offensive tackle class is good enough that 31 or 32 could present like a legitimate, like ready-made starter too, right, Mel?
Yeah, I think there's no question. We have 8 or 9 field. And then they get into the guys that can move maybe inside to the guard spot. So some flexibility they provide. Obviously, you think about interior linemen, center guards as well. But I think in terms of the right tackle position, Fuaga coming out of Oregon State, where is he going to fall? Yeah, I had him way up there and people said you got him too high. Now he's kind of settling infield in the middle of the first round. I'll be curious to see where you have Fuaga from Oregon State in your Mock 1.0. So Tyler Guyton, the kind of guy you see – yeah, potential. You see development. You see what he could be. It's not what he is. It's what he could be. So you look at what he is, you push him down just a bit. If you have the ability to project and say, I have a lot of confidence that there's going to be an offensive line coach who's going to get Tyler Guyton and craft him into a Pro Bowl caliber right tackle. So maybe Tyler Guyton gets a bump up from what we saw on tape to what maybe could be in another couple years. So there's a lot of those guys in this draft. So I think it could fall where one of those drops down, maybe Amarius Mims, who we thought would be this year's Broderick Jones, but the injury prevented that from happening. So he didn't get into the top 10, top 15, but he certainly is right off of that. And one of these guys, like I said, could maybe drop into the late first round.
You know, I'm going to use Kansas City to make a point about San Francisco. And, you know, obviously the draft is, you know, so much of our focus is on things that could help a team for this upcoming year. The other reality for San Francisco and Kansas City is that they are often looking a year or two or I guess, occasionally three in advance as well. So I'm glad that you mentioned a couple of other spots, because offensive tackle is not just the need for the potential of a right tackle upgrade, Mel, but I have no information on this. I'm just using my logic here. Trent Williams is in his mid-30s. If the 49ers win on Sunday, what more is there for Trent Williams to accomplish as a player? I'm not saying the guy is going to walk away, but we know that, like, the end is probably closer to the end than we are the beginning for Trent Williams. So it might be that they're forecasting a year or two ahead in the event they no longer have Trent under contract. And you mentioned wide receiver, which, you know, the team obviously has a terrific 1-2 duo between Deebo Samuel and also Brandon Ayuk. Deebo is under contract for multiple years beyond this season, but Ayuk enters his fifth year in 2024, which is the final year of his rookie deal. I'm sure the team would love to get a deal done with Brandon Ayuk, who's scheduled to make around $14 million next season now. But one of the realities with San Francisco is that we talk all the time about the strength of this roster, right? I mean, this roster is absolutely loaded on both sides of the ball. One of the, I guess, problems, if you will, about having so much talent is eventually guys can't all be kept. So if they felt like they weren't going to be able to keep Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, two big hefty wide receiver contracts with all the other great players they have, maybe they would get ahead of Brandon Ayuk's free agency in 2025 by addressing wide receiver in 2024. Last position that I'll mention, Mel, is pass rusher, right? They obviously made a couple of trades during the season, Randy Gregory and also Chase Young. You mentioned how Chase obviously hasn't necessarily provided big returns. I can see them going there, but it doesn't feel like there's a ton of depth at pass rusher, Mel. It's going to be readily available right around pick 31 or 32 that could be an instant impact player.
Exactly. For them, maybe Chop Robinson, we'll see where he falls coming out of Penn State. But to the wide receiver point field, you know, you got a couple guys that maybe could be there. And I always try to throw a curveball in, that old Kuiper stunt in the late first round. And I'll tell you right now, I'll give you a preview to Mock 2.0 for Mayfield, which comes out towards the end of February. I'm going to have Ladd McConkey right in that mix.
Yeah.
Ladd McConkey to me is a plug and play guy. We know about the injury this year, but he's going to run great. He certainly catches everything. He's quick. He's explosive. He's dynamic. He's a phenomenal player. So Ladd McConkey for the 49ers, even the Chiefs, both those teams could be looking at him. Because then you get into, okay, Xavier Leggett thought maybe he could be late one, early two. So he's borderline, right? Keon Coleman, what's he going to run coming out of Florida State? He had some quiet games, right? But he's talented. He has a great catch radius. The contested situations, he'll go get it. Had a couple drops late, uncharacteristic concentration drops. But what does he run to solidify that first-round opportunity for him? But I think McConkey, to me, Troy Franklin, Oregon's a speed merchant, can get down the field, vertical stretch guy, right, with the length. Needs to put some weight on that frame, get a little stronger. But he's the kind of guy who was taking a top off of defense on a regular basis for Bo Nix at Oregon. So I think the wide receiver position is going to provide some opportunities in the late first round for the 49ers and the Chiefs.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, Mel. And just to put that point into a little bit more context, or a little more added context to it, is that all these wide receivers present a different skill set, but it does feel like when you're picking somewhere in that like 25 to 32 range, it's all teams that need a guy who can contribute right away, right? And Ladd McConkey feels like the day you add him to your roster, he's ready to go. There might be other wide receivers in this class that present a higher ceiling during later points of their career, but they might need a redshirt season or a half of a redshirt season, whereas Ladd, I don't know if his ceiling is quite the same as some of the guys who are bigger than him, right? That is not going to blow you away with his size, but I think he's ready to go right now and contribute rather quickly. That could be appealing to a team that feels like its window is right now and can't afford to wait. All right, so from San Francisco to Kansas City we go. Obviously, the champs are familiar drafting in this spot, Mel. They did so last year at pick 32, and their first-round pick has been a healthy scratch for much of this year. So a reminder, you're not always drafting for just the year ahead. But if you look at Kansas City, what are some of the areas that you believe this team needs to address?
Yeah, Felix Anudike Uzoma had some moments early, but then, like you say, didn't get a lot of playing time. You think about, you know, Chimari Connor, safety from Virginia Tech, showed some promise. Yep. Certainly Rice was outstanding as a rookie, gave them that impactful performance that they had to have, because guess what? It can't just all be Kelsey. And it certainly he provided Rice for Patrick Mahomes a really good option in that passing game and uplifted them a lot in some of those key games. I think you look at where we are right now, there's some free agents on the defensive line field that you'll speak to, areas they could address. They went for the defensive end last year. Defensive tackle, could be a bit of an issue moving forward with some free agency. Wide receiver to me, they went for it and hit with Rice in the second round. They could certainly go back to that with McConkey, Troy Franklin, somebody like that. I want to see where Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU goes. I mean, he was the other receiver opposite Malik Neighborsfield. He had the 1 year this year where he put it all together. He did more this year than he did the two previous years combined. 17 is the magic number. 17 touchdown receptions, 17-yard average per catch. He was outstanding. Now he's still developing. He's still a guy that needs a little more polish. But Brian Thomas Jr., with that length, catch radius, production with Neighbors at LSU with Jaden Daniels getting him the football, where does Brian Thomas Jr. fall? I'm curious the way he feels. That's one I'm going to be looking at your mock. You haven't been, you've heard, you know about that, because that will be a little bit as to where these other receivers come off the board.
Yeah, it will be really interesting, Mel. So wide receiver, to me, screams like potential first-round need for the Kansas City Chiefs for all the reasons that you just laid out. And it's a miracle, Mel. And I'm not trying to be, I would say hyperbolic or exaggerating when I said, like, it's a miracle in some ways that this Chiefs team offensively has accomplished what it has when you think about the inconsistency at wide receiver, right? Like, if not for Rashee Rice, where is this season? And by the way, for much of the first half of the season, Rashee Rice was not nearly the player that he has become, but you can count on these things going into 2024. At wide receiver, Rashee Rice. That's the whole list of wide receivers that you can count on for Kansas City right now. We'll see what it looks like for Sky Moore, who, by the way, was activated off of IR yesterday, but nearly two full seasons in, hasn't necessarily answered all the questions for him. Marquez Valdez-Scantling has a very specific role, Mel, but you know, he's like a $9 or $10 million per year player who's had some key moments, obviously, in this year's playoffs, but not a consistent player for this Chiefs offense. And I mentioned how when you have a lot of good players in your roster, you're going to have to make some difficult cap decisions. Wouldn't surprise me if Marquez Valdez-Scantling is one of those guys whose contract becomes a conversation this offseason. And up until, and I know that people right now are remembering the Chiefs offense that we have seen from basically like week 17 on, which was when they played Cincinnati. It was the final regular season game that Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce played in because they sat out in week 18. They have all of a sudden started to look much more like they were last year in terms of explosive plays. But last season, Mel, without Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs ranked first in 20-plus yard completions in the entire NFL. That dropped all the way to 14th this year. They need big play threats in this offense. And if Brian Thomas Jr. is somehow still there, the idea of him catching passes from Patrick Mahomes, to go from Jaden Daniels to Patrick Mahomes, is downright scary. Yeah. Downright scary. How about deep? Let's vet that defensive tackle, defensive line conversation out a little bit further, though, Mel, because we have this defensive tackle class is kind of like taken a couple of different shapes. There were times where it looked like it was going to be really good. There were times where it felt like maybe it wasn't living up to the expectations. But at pick 31 or 32, who could be some of the guys in the mix for Kansas City at that
spot? Well, Johnny Newton, where is he going to fall from Illinois? I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I think you talk about Byron Murphy the second from Texas. I'm a little higher on Byron Murphy the second than I am. I like him, but I didn't see what some have said about top 10, top 15. I haven't seen that screen to me that Byron Murphy the second is that kind of guy. I like Tavondre Sweat as a guy who can be a good complementary run-stuffing defensive tackle. I think he could drop second round, certainly field. I think he'll be a really good pick at that point. But some of the other guys didn't perform to the level expected. Braden Fisk, though, Florida State, formerly of Western Michigan, did perform really well week in and week out. We talk about performance-based, production-based. Braden Fisk is a hustler. He's active. He keeps offensive linemen on their toes. You better not take a playoff. You better not lack focus for a snap, because Braden Fisk will get you field. And he gets a lot of offensive linemen over the course of his career. He got a lot of them. He did it at the Senior Bowl practice. So I think Braden Fisk is the kind of guy to look at in the second round area, at worst, third round. I think to the point about what you were saying about Kansas City field, Patrick Mahomes, how he elevated this football team is amazing, because we saw him was on Christmas with getting handled at home by the Raiders. Okay. I mean, dominated, really. They were never in that game. So you think about where we how far we came. I go back to Denver when John Elway was leading the Broncos to Super Bowl after Super Bowl and getting blown out. And he said, well, what happened? Well, they shouldn't even have been there. He carried that team. Remember, we had some issues the Browns had with turnovers and just bad breaks that let Denver move on. The drive by John Elway. John Elway is one of my all-time greatest quarterbacks. quarterbacks. Why? Because of what he did with a team that wouldn't have been close to the Super Bowl without him, or playoffs without him. Then he won two Super Bowls at the end of his career, not limping at the final Super Bowl, not being just a piece of the final Super Bowl. The MVP of the Super Bowl his final year was John Elway. Look at his numbers over those last two Super Bowl wins. They were outstanding. So for John Elway, that's why he's one of my greatest of all time. And I think Patrick Mahomes is one of the greatest of all time, certainly third overall right now, right? Behind, you know, Tom Brady and Joe Montana. Why? Because he's taken this team to a place that nobody thought they could be. Based on what we saw at various stages of this team, this season, Field, did you ever think, and I know you had Kansas City over the 49ers back in August, that was a great call on your part. Did you at any point feel confident that the Chiefs were going to be landing in the Super Bowl in Vegas coming up this Sunday?
I wanted to see if ESPN would let me like retroactively change my pick by like, you know, Thanksgiving now. I mean, this team was 11-6. Like in terms of inspiring confidence, like how can anybody say, I mean, other than the fact that they have Patrick Mahomes, and they have Andy Reid, and they have Travis Kelce. But, like, I don't think anybody was sitting there shouting from the top of their lungs that Kansas City was looking like the team that had a real chance to snap the 20-year drought that we have in the NFL right now without a repeat champion. And yet, they're like that boxer, Mel, right? They're the boxer that, like, you just don't let that boxer have a chance. And until that boxer has been knocked down for the very final time, you cannot count that boxer out. And that's what the Chiefs remind me of this year. They have grit, they have determination, and they certainly have this dynamic, Mel, where they play their best when the stakes are at their very highest.
I was never as confident in a game. I was doing the Darian Mel show. I had the Saturday before the game when the Ravens were hosting Kansas City. I was like, no chance. Ravens are winning this football game. Now, you get in your mind that this has got to be a win. Everything pointed to the Ravens winning that football game. And they didn't.
Yep.
So you go in, you play Miami, you beat Josh Allen in Buffalo, you beat Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, and here you are in the Super Bowl. I didn't think that was going to happen. I didn't think there was very little chance of that happening. I gave Kansas City hardly any chance to beat Baltimore. I said, in my mind, it was Baltimore all the way. They're playing the 49ers in the Super Bowl, and the 49ers, fortunate to be there. Think about how they struggled. And here's where Vegas, Johnny Avello, with DraftKings, is a good friend of mine. And Johnny and Vegas, Field, you're in Vegas, right? Vegas knows, right? And if I asked you right now.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What do you think the line, like back when you were talking about, you know, audibilizing away from your Chiefs, right? And saying, I want somebody else that, in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs are going to get there. Okay. They're going to get there and they're going to beat all the odds. And the 49ers are going to struggle in a couple games at home that they were very fortunate to win. And the Chiefs are going to go on the road and beat the Bills and the Ravens. And the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, despite, as you say, issues, is a 2-point underdog as we speak right now. It seems like
Vegas,
it seems like, is begging you to take the Chiefs, begging you to take the Chiefs. So to me, when that happens, you're better off taking the Niners. We'll see how that all plays out. But the fact that Mahomes, who just doesn't lose in these types of spots, is a 2-point underdog, tells you all you need to know. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this game plays out.
A couple more spots for the Chiefs to keep an eye on in the draft, not just at the beginning, but also throughout the draft. You talked about the defensive line already. We talked about wide receiver already. L'Jarius Sneed is scheduled to become a free agent, Mel. And as you know, he has made himself a ton of money this season. He has every week. I know. Mel, I mean, he has, but this goes beyond, obviously, just the incredible play in the AFC Championship game, knocking the ball loose from Zay Flowers. There are not a lot of teams that consistently deploy a shadow cornerback every single week, where they just say, our number one is lining up opposite of your number one. The Chiefs are at the top of that list. They basically say whether it's a big-bodied receiver or a fast guy like Tyreek Hill, L'Jarius Sneed is going to man up against him. And he had like a streak of like 15 straight games without surrendering a touchdown as the primary defender in man-to-man coverage. So if he's gone, Mel, and it's going to be expensive to keep him, the Chiefs obviously have a lot of good players already under contract for 2024 and beyond. That makes cornerback a bigger need to me as well. And there are some guys that could be available, picks 31, 32, that I think certainly could become starters for Kansas City right away. I'll also offer up one more spot that I don't exactly know what to make of it, Mel, but it's offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Donovan Smith, going to be a free agent, their left tackle. They have Wanye Morris, who they drafted last year out of Oklahoma, third round pick a year ago.
Yep.
Who's played, you know, has played meaningful snaps and has started games for them. He's got a chance to become a starter. But I don't know what happens with Juwan Taylor. Juwan Taylor, the right tackle add last offseason, who his contract suggests he's borderline immovable. They may have no choice but to go back to the well with Juwan Taylor. Led the NFL in penalties, though, has, I don't think, necessarily lived up to that $20 million per year contract. So if the Chiefs ever moved on from Juwan Taylor, which, again, might just be financially incompatible, Mel, offensive tackle will be another spot that I think Kansas City and San Francisco could both hunt for 31-32.
No question about it. Yeah, Morris, that third-round pick, you're right. He's going to be asked a lot there. And like I said, the penalties and the mistakes of those tackles haunted them, but it didn't prevent them from getting where they were. And they dealt with Baltimore's crowd noise where Houston couldn't, and there wasn't any pre-snap penalties in that game. And you mentioned the play, Sneed, with Zay Flowers making a heck of a play. It wasn't Zay's fault. It was just a heck of a play by Sneed. And then you think about Jones getting Dawkins to bump into Josh when he had that touchdown pass late. So their key players at key moments stepped up big field. I think when you talk about the cornerback spot for Kansas City, Ennis Rakestraw Jr. from Missouri as a kid, you know, is going to fall somewhere in that area. And Jarvis Brownlee Jr. from Louisville, formerly of Florida State, made a lot of big plays, made a ton of pass breakups, was really impactful for Louisville and had a good Senior Bowl week. Jarvis Brownlee Jr. from Louisville is the guy. I'm not going to say he's late one field, but I got to think he's somewhere in that second round mix. So he's a cornerback that people didn't pay a lot of attention to, should have. We were watching him. Everybody saw him at Florida State show promise, and everybody saw him at Louisville really put it all together and really develop into one heck of a lockdown cornerback.
Man, if they got Ennis Rakestraw and kept him in the state of Missouri, Mel, that to me would be borderline unfair. You and I have talked about him both on this show and I think off the show as well. Rakestraw, he just might be the most tenacious defensive back in the entire draft. He is, I would say, like, not quite Devin Witherspoon, who last year was one of the more punishing cornerback prospects that I know you had studied in quite some time. But there are some hints of that Devin Witherspoon mentality within Ennis Rakestraw's game. I don't think you or I believe he'll be there, but in a world in which Cooper DeJean dropped to 31 or 32 mil, that would be unfair too, right? That kid is a ready-made starter, unbelievable athlete. He might just crush the combine so much that there's no way he makes it to 31, 32, but Cooper DeJean could be interesting for the Chiefs. Before we wrap on the Chiefs and the 49ers, Mel, and dive into the safety class, as we reflect backwards on this 2023 draft, like, what do you make of the impact that the 2023 draft has had on the two teams playing in the Super Bowl? Kind of, frankly, a mixed bag.
It was a mixed bag. You're right. I think, you know, we're still waiting on Anu Dike Uzomah, but you get the production from Rice. You get the Morris, you know, filled in. You get Connor showing some promise. So you get a lot going on there. Jair Brown with the 49ers. Moody, the kicker, obviously filled in, had some inconsistent moments, but he was there for them. So not a lot. They didn't need a lot, but they got guys that were able to contribute. So I think some of these guys with programs like this, organizations like this, will be developed. And you'll be hearing about them down the line where you get that, what happened? What happened with these guys? Why were they off the radar? Why didn't they produce more? So some of these guys will in the future be more prominent figures with these organizations.
Yeah, totally. I feel like with San Francisco and Kansas City, but San Francisco, maybe more specifically, Mel, because of the fact that they did not have a first-round pick last year. Like, I felt like part of the – and they didn't have a second-round pick last year, by the way, either, right? Like, they kind of identified that other than Jake Moody, their kicker who they took in the third round, of course, as you mentioned, like, I don't think anybody that they drafted last season, Mel, did they feel like they needed to be a standout starter this year in order for the roster to be complete, right? So right. I'm not trying to take them off the hook entirely. You're still going to make good on these guys you identify as developmental players. In Kansas City, though, like I think they probably were feeling like if they could get one or two, you know, legitimate contributors right away, they'd be in business. And while, you know, I think having a first-round pick basically redshirting is not something that many teams can afford, Kansas City could. And Rashee Rice by himself, Mel, like the impact that he's had over the second half of the season, to me, makes that entire draft almost worthwhile. Beyond the fact that he is a second-round pick, which, you know, induces a little bit more margin for error than a first-round pick, they traded up for him, right? Like, they said, we cannot afford to wait one more pick. We need to go up and get Rashee Rice. So I appreciate and applaud the audacity the Chiefs showed last year in the draft to make that bold move that ended up paying off, I think, in a significant way. He has a very good shot to be their top wide receiver for a long time going forward. All right, Mel, we ready to dive into some safeties?
Oh, I know
you want to talk safeties because, you know, Mel, it's not every year where we have a top 10 pick at safety or even a top 20 pick at safety, but I do feel like you and I have identified, we've got five we want to discuss at least that we think are pretty darn good players as well. We can go in any order you want, but the way we have them listed is we're going to start with Tyler Newbin, Minnesota safety, Mel. What do you make of the former Golden Gopher standout? What might be the range? What might be the skill set that he brings to the table?
I look at production and impact plays. If you go into the safeties field, they better be guys that show up big. You go to all the safeties we look at in the NFL with Minka Fitzpatrick had 9 interceptions in a 3-year period. Go to Kyle Hamilton, 8 interceptions over 3 years. You see all the guys performing. Tyler Newbin is a guy. He's been around, it seems like, forever. This is a rarity field in college football to get a prospect who is a second-round pick probably, who is a 5-year player. Keep in mind, COVID didn't count, right? But he played 5 full years of playing experience with the Minnesota Golden Gophers was Tyler Newbin, 6'2", 210-pounder, 12 picks over the last 3 years, 13 in his career. Played, as I say, 5 seasons, the consistency, 3, 4, then 5 picks over the last 3 years. I tell you what, he processes, he diagnoses, he gets to the football, he doesn't hesitate coming downhill, makes his presence felt in run support. I think he's the number one safety right now. Thought Cameron Kitchens from Miami, of course, he had the injury early on. Then we remember the big hiccup against Georgia Tech where Christian Leary got behind him. Haynes King rolled out. Play should have never happened, right? That game should have been over with kneel downs as Tim Hasselbeck is still screaming, why aren't you kneeling down? Okay, to Mario Cristobal. They didn't, and they let the Hail Mary take place and that crazy win that should never have happened. And Cam Kitchens let Leary get behind him. Haynes King rolled out, hit him, touchdown, game over. So I think when you look at Cam Kitchens, though, he did have that production, the big play production during his career. I think he falls in as the second best safety behind Tyler Newbin from Minnesota.
Okay, so let's start here. Tyler Newbin also, like, you talked about the production. It feels like Mel, you know what what's the old saying? That defensive backs are just former wide receivers that couldn't catch. I feel like Tyler Newbin is trying to prove the defensive backs can catch. You know, at the beginning of the season, I believe Minnesota and Nebraska played. That was week 0, right, if I'm not mistaken? So the college football microscope is shining that much closer on those games because there's only, you know, usually a half dozen or maybe a dozen games taking place. But I remember his instant impact in that first game reminded me that, like, defensive backs can catch on occasion. Newbin, I think, a player who, as you said, second round range. I'll be curious, the long speed there, Mel, right? Like, is he going to be a guy that if he loses a step on a wide receiver down the field, how adept is he at catching up and, like, making up for that gap between himself and the wide receiver? That, to me, will be an important part of his week in Indianapolis. Cam Kitchens from Miami, honestly, Mel, I just think he's sort of rock solid, too. Right? You laid out, you know, the big key sort of error in that game against Georgia Tech, but it feels like he's just kind of checks pretty much every box at, like, a pretty reasonable level, had a lot of on-ball production, had a 3-interception game back in 2022. Played opposite of James Williams, who looks like he's going to become a linebacker now at the NFL level. But it feels like Cam Kitchens. No, I don't want to say safe. I feel like that's unfair to the player because it suggests that, like, the ceiling isn't that high. But I feel like the bust risk is pretty low for Cam Kitchens. Played a lot of football, done a lot of everything for Miami, and I just feel like kind of has the skill set that translates for basically any defense.
Yeah, ball hawk. Got 11 picks over the last 2 years. And you think about that ability that he's shown throughout his career speaks volumes. You mentioned as far as having that ability, that speed and coverage, you almost want now almost a four cornerback situation with your safeties. They got to be able to cover. They got to have range. They got to be able to anticipate. And he does that very effectively. A kid that also presents versatility is Jaden Hicks out of Washington State. You told me this morning you're in Vegas. You're watching Brennan Jackson, pass rusher from Washington State field. Jaden Hicks has the size, he has the length, and he has the ability, you talk about, to play multiple roles, wear a lot of hats in that secondary. You talk about deep, slot, box. He can do all those types of things. I'd like to see him be more of a short open field tackler at times, but I think Jaden Hicks, the way he performed this year, the versatility he provides on that back end is going to be something that's going to attract teams maybe as high as the second round.
I could see him being a top 40 pick, Mel. He'd actually be my pick right now. If I were to plant my flag on my top safety, it would be Jaden Hicks. From Washington State. I know our buddy Jim Nagy has talked about this, of course, the Senior Bowl director. And because of the amended rules that allowed underclassmen to participate in the Senior Bowl, Jaden Hicks is the kind of guy who could be in Mobile. And I'm sure in future years, there's going to be all kinds of juniors all over the various all-star game maps. But he talked about how Wisconsin, the game Jaden Hicks had against Wisconsin, I think it was week two of this past season, was maybe the most impressive we saw from any safety. And it certainly is on a very short list. I mean, he is all over the field, but it feels like Jaden Hicks might be the most versatile out of this entire group. Like, I believe Jaden Hicks, if asked, could play in a box safety role and has both the willingness and the strength as a tackler to hold up and not be a liability where teams are saying, let's just run at Hicks every single play. Meanwhile, I thought he had the ability to get deep in coverage and hold up in the deep third of the field, either half of the field. You name the coverage, I thought he was capable of holding up. And then finally, showed some like man-to-man coverage ability as well, Mel, right? Like that matters because while it's not going to be every snap where safeties are in coverage, you think about the influx of tight ends right now, not just Travis Kelce and Mark Andrews and George Kittle anymore. You've got Sam Laporta's breaking the mold. David Njoku became an unbelievable player this year for Cleveland. Evan Engram set the single season record or catches by a tight end this past year. All of a sudden, we've got like 10 or 12 really, really good tight ends. And I haven't even mentioned the guy who could be one of the best in short order in Brock Bowers as well. Safeties that can hold up a man-to-man coverage really, to me, are becoming more valuable than ever. And I think Jaden Hicks can do exactly that.
Yeah, he can. Javon Bullard at Georgia, all we remember is that hit on Marvin Harrison Jr., which was at the end of the third quarter. And Ohio State was dominating the game. They got a field goal. They went up with 38-24. Bullard, Harrison doesn't play in the fourth quarter. Ohio State doesn't have their key guy. Georgia comes back and wins that national title game a couple years ago. But Javon Bullard certainly is a guy who was a really good player for the Georgia Bulldogs. He'll be in that mix. And Cole Bishop and Sione Vaki, the other safety. Former running back who played both. I say former running back, but he played running back and safety. And he was a running back. He was the blocking back for Najee Harris at Antioch High School back in the day.
So that's a pull right there, Mel.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that is going to find a role on day three of the draft. The other safety, along with Cole Bishop from Utah. And I mentioned earlier, Field, about corners, safeties. I like safeties who have corner experience that played that spot. And Jalen Simpson from Auburn has played corner. And Jalen Simpson has ball production, okay? He's going to intercept some passes. He was a great athlete in high school, okay? This is a kid who was multiple sport guy, impactful at corner, safety. Those kind of guys, you sacrifice a little. You say, okay, what's more important, being that rugged tackler, that aggressive guy who's going to – in the NFL, now you don't need that necessarily. Don't even want it because it results usually in a penalty. So for me, a guy like Simpson, Jalen Key at Alabama, formerly of UAB, is going to be another day three guy, Field. When we're in that fifth, sixth round area, we're going to be talking about a kid at UAB was a good one. Alabama as well. He has the size, the length. To me, a guy like Jalen Key in day three of the draft, along with Vaki from Utah, will be interesting guys to keep an eye on.
Yeah, there's such an interesting mix. Cole Bishop, who I want to ask you about Javon Bullard. So remind me to ask you about Bullard before we move on from this conversation. Bishop, the only guy that we didn't get into too much depth there, but he is Mr. Versatility, right? He might be the best. There's a couple of defensive backs that really come to mind, at least amongst the ones that I've studied, Mel, that are the best blitzers in this class. Mm-hmm. Probably Mike Sanderstill from Michigan, maybe the best blitzing cornerback. But Cole Bishop might be the best blitzing safety that I have seen What I haven't seen from Cole Bishop as frequently, and again, this is not the player's fault. He's just doing the job that his coaches assigned to him, is I don't know how much I have seen from him in the back end, right? Like, are you going to want Cole Bishop running 25, 30 yards down the field or backpedaling? I don't know that I have seen enough of that to feel confident that's the role that he's going to thrive in. But a player who can sort of dominate, like I thought his zone instincts were terrific, had some good on-ball production there, was a sack artist as well. I feel like those kind of skills, I know for sure I'm getting out of Cole Bishop already. I don't know, maybe, you know, I'm finding that putting a grade on a player at this point of the process is important because people are interesting, but I'm also, are interested, I should say. But when we're just 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks from the start of the combine, I'm starting to remind myself that you get a little bit ahead of yourself, Mel. And the next thing you know, you say a guy's a fourth or fifth round pick, and then he goes to Indianapolis and blows it up or struggles, and all of a sudden you're calibrating or recalibrating by two rounds. But I do think, as of this conversation, Cole Bishop might be like an interesting fourth or fifth round pick out of Utah. Listed a lot of guys there, Mel. Anybody else that we haven't covered amongst those safeties?
Now, there's a guy's a 1 point field about some of these safeties, and some of these guys will drop a little bit. That's why I brought up Jalen Simpson. I brought up Jalen Key as guys, Locke from Utah. Think about this field. Now, I look at all these guys were productive players, and that's the key. When you get into day three, think about this. Geno Stone came out of Iowa, right? He had production. Yeah. He had four interceptions as a sophomore. He a nice year for the Ravens. He was a seventh round pick, right? Kevin Byard had 19 career interceptions come out of Middle Tennessee State. He went in the third round. And Micah Hyde, fifth round. Jordan Poyer, seventh round, right? So, again, you've seen guys that were productive. Poyer had a heck of a career at Oregon State. Jordan Poyer had 13 interceptions his last 3 years. Micah Hyde, 8 interceptions his last 3 years. Those kind of guys dropped until the later portion of the draft. Hyde went fifth round. Poyer went seventh round, right? Stone went seventh round. So you can at times. And what's the common denominator? Is you have to have production, ball production. You got to get the interceptions, the takeaways. You got to have that. And if you have that working in conjunction with a guy who had a decent enough workout, the workout numbers have to be good enough. That'd be great. But when you can find a guy instinctive, that tells me, field, diagnostic ability, awareness, anticipation, instincts, things that 40 times in workouts at Indy don't tell you, right? Okay. Who can make up for not having that 40 time? Who can make up for not having that type of athleticism? Who can make up for it? Guys that showed in college they could. Okay. And those are the kind of guys when I'm looking in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, I can usually find one of those guys that slips through the cracks that I go back and say, did they produce? Is I always say it's analytics. It's production. I don't care what you want to call it. In this case, it ain't like going to lie. Production in some cases doesn't lie. And those numbers speak for volumes about why those players developed in the NFL to be really good ones when in college they showed well, but still because of workout numbers, whatever, got lost in the shuffle and dropped into the later rounds.
All right. Your great points about production reminded me of a player that I specifically wanted to debate with you right now that I think will be all over the map in terms of how teams grade him because his great strength is offset by some significant limitations. Kalen Ballock, USC Mel. If you were to assess how these safeties stack up in terms of the ability to play center field in the NFL, I think Kalen Ballock is the best out of any of the safeties in this class. I also wonder if the question was, if you're trying to come downhill and tackle a wide receiver and screenplay or a running back who's gotten between the tackles past the second or third level, Block might be a guy that teams say, I'm just not so sure I can trust him. He's probably under 200 pounds, even at 6'3", kind of an ankle biter as a tackler, right? The range is incredible. The tackling limitations, I think, are real, and the sort of the overall body armor are real. So where do you settle in on Kalen Ballock as a prospect? Are we talking about a guy that has top 100 upside, or is he more like a day three pick to you?
You know what, Field? There's some players you just say, yeah, throw my arms up. I don't know. And he was one of those guys. But if you look at my top 10 rankings, if you follow my top 10 positional rankings all year, I started in August with the top 10s, right? And every Friday they were updated, as they will be tomorrow, right? Bullock was a guy that I had ran at 8, 9, 10 spot, wanted to bump him out, kept him there because you saw some things you liked. You saw some things that bothered you. They're players, Field, and you're going to find this every year that you just don't know. And if you don't know, you usually don't take them unless they fall to a point in the draft where it's just too hard to pass up. But let somebody else figure it out. I haven't figured them out. I really haven't. Like I said, that's why I kept them in that 8, 9, 10 spot when some had them a lot higher. I didn't see it. I didn't see him projecting into the NFL as that guy I could have in my top five safety. So I kept him around that 8, 9, 10 spot. Josh Proctor's another one at Ohio State. I kept in that general range. Bo Braid from Maryland, liked him some. Then there's some other times I was not as impressed. So I kept him in that same general area coming out of Maryland. So I think there's a lot. There's some of those safeties in that back end of that top 10 that I just have not yet figured out. And the number one guy on that list is the USC safety you mentioned, Phil.
Okay, so 9 interceptions over the past 3 years. You just mentioned production. He had 5 last year. He has returned 2 interceptions for a touchdown. But like you see it, right? Like if the task was just to find a way to prevent big plays down the field, I think Kalen Bullock is probably as good as it gets amongst all these safeties. It's just that there's a lot more to the position beyond that. So I too, Mel, have struggled in terms of like placing a very specific grade because, again, there are teams that may say – we have a certain type of standard in terms of like ruggedness and physicality that we require from our safeties. And there are others that might say, hey, we don't mind. This is not, I mean, they are not perfect parallels, but, you know, Marcus Williams for the Baltimore Ravens makes his money, Mel, right? As you know, because he's one of the best umbrella players in the entire NFL. Like very rarely do guys get behind Marcus Williams with terrific speed. Whereas you've got other players around the NFL at safety that are probably more imposing run defenders than somebody like Marcus Williams. So one team might evaluate Bullock in a very different light than others. Part of the reason why sometimes this really is more art than science, at least I am learning that on the fly. And then am I higher on a Maryland player than Mel Kiper Jr., Bo Braid?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Man, the Buckeyes, Ohio State Buckeyes, played the Maryland Terrapins this year. And Bo Braid's getting reps opposite of Marvin Harrison Jr. in man-to-man covers. I'm surprised that wasn't enough to convince you.
It was at times enough. And I'd see other instances where it wasn't, Phil. So a little inconsistency there. Bo Braid is a guy who certainly has talent and ability, no question about it. At one point in time, I thought he could be a third-round guy. And I still think he maybe could be in that discussion. But he's one of those 8, 9, or 10 in that spot as far as safeties. Because I look at it and I say, go back, Phil, to one player that I kept always – I always check the box scores after games, right? Just always check it. And I kept seeing a few years ago, Reed Blankenship. Every time they played Middle Tennessee, Reed Blankenship was up at the top with 16 tackles, right?
Yes.
12 tackles. I'm talking about every game, field. And this year, I watched Kansas, right? And every time I saw Kansas, and I'll check Kansas's box score, Kenny Logan Jr. was at the top of that list. So he was. There's a kid, Kendarren Ray at Tulsa. Every time I checked Tulsa, this kid was off the charts. So it's something that it forces you to go back and look and evaluate when you see production like that. So I'm going to go back. I got a lot of studying to do of Logan from Kansas and Ray from Tulsa. Because I'm telling you what, if you go box score after box score, week after week, field, these guys were like Blankenship.
Yeah.
12 tackles, 16 tackles. Everybody else had 8, 9. They were head and shoulders above everybody. Production off the charts. If that doesn't force you to go back to the tape, nothing will.
Okay. All right. So a couple more sort of deeper sleepers to keep an eye on. Again, there's more depth than there is star power in this year's safety class, but I'm glad we had the chance to kind of vet it out a little bit, Mel. Some really, really intriguing players and maybe, you know, sort of the archetype that your team subscribes to could influence how and when they are drafted. All right. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Mel, I have my first mock draft that will be out 6 days from the time that you and I are having this conversation right now. The rules are No trade scenarios, Mel, and that does make it quite tricky. I understand why you've been angling for more trades than are currently afforded to us. But we wanted to sort of talk through some like potential trade scenarios in the draft, maybe earlier on in the draft, Mel, and just sort of offer up some thoughts. At least the ones that I came up with, Mel, not super specific, a little more sort of like conceptual than they are specific. But do you want to start? Is there sort of a trade up or a trade down scenario that you think might be logical in the upcoming draft?
I think the Detroit Lions moving up for a corner. Screams move up. I mean, the Lions aren't far. I mean, they showed, hey, they should be right there. They could be in the Super Bowl right now, right? So they are a cornerback team. That's the need area, right? You think about what they have in terms of guys they can move up. Ennis Rakestraw Jr., Missouri, right? Quinyon Mitchell, Toledo. If they see, okay, is he dropping down just a bit? Could we move up and get him? So I think those are going to be a couple names to keep an eye on. When we get into where does Nate Wiggins from Clemson fall? You mentioned Cooper DeJean, guy. You talk about a safety net. If he's not a corner, he's a safety, right? So when I say basically, you're not going to get a bust. You're going to get a guy who's going to produce for you. He's going to have a major role in your secondary. If it's corner, great. If it's not, he's a safety and he can cover and he's got range and instincts and he's going to test really well and he's going to be back from that injury, right? In time, plenty of time. Yeah. So we're talking about a guy who to me should be a mid first round pick. If he starts dropping a bit, Kansas City, and certainly for wide receiver, the Chiefs could be a team moving up. For the Lions, the cornerback spot, the Chiefs, I'll get to wide receiver.
Okay.
Good on Rice. Is there a receiver that they target that could be a guy that we don't want to wait to get? We have to move up and get. That could be Brian Thomas Jr. Could be somebody like that with that length to go along with him. Could be a guy, if you talk about moving down a little bit or moving up, Ladd McConkey. If you're fearful that the Bills or somebody else could look, and I think there's going to be teams going to be on Ladd McConkey. Do you jump up 3-4 spots to get ahead of them? Okay. And that gets into, don't have any discussion. Don't let anybody know what you're thinking, because if a team gets wind of what a team likes, I remember the Eagles and the Bills back in the day with Lindsey Scott and Perry Tuttle. Remember that whole deal?
Yes.
Where the Eagles were screaming, oh my gosh, we wanted Perry Tuttle, and they moved up, the Bills did, to get him, and we settled for Lindsey Scott. Well, guess what? Settling for Lindsey Scott turned out to be a heck of a lot better. He turned out to be a great player. Bills moved up, got Perry Tuttle, who was a disappointment. So when you look at where we are right now, we're seeing that movement there with Kansas City. Dallas, is Dallas going to move up to get a wide receiver to help out CD Lamb? Sure. Are they going to stand pat? What does Dallas do? Dallas could be a team going up to get the Atlanta Falcons at 8. I think they got to trade for Justin Fields. I think that's a trade you got to make. If you could give up a 2 and a 4 to get Justin Fields, and you got what, Zach Robinson coming from the Rams and Sean McVay to be the coordinator, right? T.J. Yates is going to be the quarterback coach, right? Raheem Morris brings Zach Robinson in. If I'm the Atlanta Falcons, I'm going to make that move immediately. If the Bears decide to trade Justin Fields and draft Caleb Williams, and I can get him for a 2 and a 4, are you kidding me, Field? I'm making that move.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, at some point, the Falcons here's what I would say I agree on, Mel. I agree on the idea that the Falcons can't mess around this offseason as it pertains to the quarterback spot and either take a half measure and hope that it works or say that we have so many great pieces around whoever our quarterback is that the play should be elevated. That hasn't been the case for the past couple of years. Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, those guys can all become stars in the NFL if they just had capable quarterback play around them. All right, I have two, Mel, that I wanted to offer up, and I'll start here. And this may be the kind of thing that sounds good in February, but doesn't matter once we get to April because there's just no way that it happens. The Denver Broncos have pick 12 right now, Mel.
Right.
You and I have talked about how quarterbacks are going to go a lot higher than where we have them ranked on our overall big board. But if the Broncos can find a way to maneuver back a little bit down the board, Mel, from 12 to 15, 17, 18, 19, somewhere in that range, and still take a first-round quarterback, that to me would make the idea of drafting a Bo Nix or a J.J. McCarthy or a Michael Penix Jr. more palatable. Denver enters the draft right now, Mel, with 6 total selections. 6. One of the fewest of any team in the NFL, and they're not getting any comp picks because they spent a ton of money last year in free agency. Moreover, they have no second-round pick. They kind of need to, like, get the cabinet restocked a little bit. So Denver, if they can, I think would be maybe in a position to move back. Now, Of course, the counterpoint in April is going to be you're too nervous about missing out on your guy. But in February, that idea sounds logical to me. On the other side of the coin now, and I want to hear both your thoughts on both of these.
Sure.
I've been thinking about the New York Giants a little bit more. The Giants have the sixth pick in the draft. You and I both feel like there's a very good chance the three top quarterbacks are gone by then. We also feel like that would be a pretty significant reach on whoever we decide quarterback four is by the time we get to April. But the idea of the Giants moving in from round two to the back end of round one to taking a quarterback to me is, to, I don't know about irresponsible, but it wouldn't be something that I would advise, Mel. But I've been thinking about this dynamic a lot this week that is in play for a handful of teams. When we are making our analysis of moves, we are suggesting moves that are sort of backed up by logic in an all things being equal scenario. As you know, though, Mel, not all these GMs and head coaches have time on their side. They may realize that we're one bad year away from not being in our current jobs in 2025. I'm not saying that the Giants are in a make or break year, but when you go from 9-7-1 to the 6th overall pick in the draft, there's an obvious amount of pressure. And if you're the Giants, Daniel Jones has two neck injuries, ACL tear. Obviously, he's coming back off of that as well. Are you mindful of the possibility that if things don't go well this year with Daniel Jones under center, we could be in trouble? So instead, you try to make the move for what you might view as an upgrade to one of those other quarterbacks? That, to me, is an interesting scenario. What do you think of those two trade concepts?
A lot to unpack there, Field. You covered a lot of bases. And I think to start out with the Giants, I think the Giants, certainly wide receiver, the offensive line's got to be fixed. They got to figure Evan Neal out. Where is Evan Neal going to have a major role in this offensive line? I think guard, he played it at Alabama. That's going to be his role. So you think about adding that right tackle. Andrew Thomas is a heck of a left tackle. We know that.
Yep.
Bottom line is the line's got to be solidified. Okay, one way or another, it's got to get a lot better. Now, you think about Daniel Jones. I'm a Daniel Jones fan. I like him. I don't think it's through any fault of his. Those things happened last year. They lost games. He got hurt. Wasn't his fault.
Yep.
Two, the quarterback situation. Brian Daboll's got to get it done. They got it. They've had issues. Martindale gone. All those different things happening. Yeah, a lot of conflict. That's what happens when you lose, right? That's
it's a pressure year, Mel. I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. So Daniel Jones, I think it's his team. I think Daniel Jones, you roll forward with. You have the right quarterback, I believe. Just make sure you get the receiving entity you need. These fix the offensive line, right? Thibodeau's developing in terms of being a heck of a pass rusher. Start add pieces around him there. But I think in terms of a quarterback, I'd go for it with Daniel Jones. I'd maybe try to add one late, okay, and try to find somebody. Maybe I think Michael Pratt's got some talent at Tulane. It hasn't shown up. He's kind of been sliding down. People aren't enamored with him. When I say talent, he's not going to wow you with anything. But when I say on the field with Tulane, now I watched him against USC and Caleb Williams 2 years ago in that bowl game. I like what I saw. Now you say, okay, is he going to become this year's Brock Purdy and get lost in their shuffle? We'll see. I don't know. Yeah. But Michael Pratt gets into the later rounds because people aren't wowed over by any trait that is phenomenal. The talent of being a quarterback and getting plays done, beating defenses with his legs when he needed to, making nice throws under duress. I mean, to me, that's the kind of guy that could end up being a later round type steal. Now, in terms of what you said about the Giants and the trade for the, I would like to say I wouldn't do it. I understand what you're saying. It's always that temptation. I think the best pick last year for me, and you know where I'm going with, was Will Levis. Trade up in the second round to get Will Levis for Tennessee. I mean, you got to redraft. Will Levis should be in the first round. If you're going to redraft anything accurately, put him in the first. And forget about this QBR. It's nonsense. But in terms of Will Levis to me allows you to build around the quarterback. When you can hit on that second, third round guy field and have a franchise quarterback, and you don't have the money invested, Russell Wilson, third round pick. What did that allow Seattle to do all those years, right? So when you don't have to invest, and Will Levis, a second round pick, you don't have to have that major investment in that quarterback, allows now Brian Callahan and Rand Carthon to build around that quarterback. So I think when you can get that guy and steal him in the second, third round, or even late, you are so much ahead of everybody else in terms of building your football team.
Okay, yeah. So some interesting thoughts there. Again, I'm trying to think of things that like teams might be balancing in their mind, Mel, because of the various timetables that they are on, right? And again, Rarely do these things exist in what I like to call an all things being equals environment. But I just, I understand that I'm mindful of the possibility that there is pressure in New York right now. And pressure can force you into interesting and difficult decisions. Conversely, in Denver, I think they would absolutely love to acquire more draft capital. And because of the fact that if they move on from Russell Wilson, their cap is going to be a mess this offseason, they might be forced into taking a quarterback in round one, even if they feel like that player is being drafted a few spots.
Let me ask you a quick question. Where do you think Drake May ends up falling in this draft?
I think 3 is the floor, Mel. Maybe I'm totally overthinking it. Maybe I'm totally misreading it. You and I keep like apologizing for not like giving enough shine to Drake May, but like the kid's phenomenal, Mel, right? He's 6'4", 230 pounds, incredible processor, like down the field strike thrower, terrific football character, leader. It was a down season, but I hope that the NFL learns from this past draft and you mentioning Will Levis, who had a slightly down season in 2022, which led to him falling all the way into round two. Like, if the NFL lets Drake May slide, I think they're going to pretty quickly regret it, Mel. Do you feel differently?
No, they certainly will, because he got beat up by a bad offensive line. And he lost the offensive line was just awful. It was old and Ole block after Ole Bocklair, Kentucky. He got pounded and he was hurting. He was playing through injury. In terms of Drake May lost his coordinator and his top receiver, and he didn't have his other receiver coming and transferring in, Tez Walker, to after the first four games. And ironically, Field, when he didn't have Walker, his numbers were better than when he did, and then he had some struggles, and we've chronicled all that. So I'm not going to rehash all that. But for Drake May, you just keep hearing, well, he could drop a little bit. I don't know how far he's going to drop, but you're sitting there, if you're Denver at 12 and you see Drake May get past New England at 3, you're thinking, okay, you say move down. Am I thinking about maybe moving up? Now, like I said, they don't have the draft capital. They want to acquire more picks, but it's not just Denver. Some other teams could say, hey, where's Drake May? If he doesn't go 3, where does he go? So we'll have to follow that, because we always have surprise. I thought Josh Allen was going number one a few years ago, not a few years ago, but 6 years ago, whenever it was. Baker Mayfield went number one. He was the third quarterback taken. It was number 7 overall when Buffalo saw him drop and traded up to get him, Field. So this always happens. Ben Roethlisberger, him as the second highest rated quarterback. He went third. He dropped to like 11 to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh just sat where they were and let him fall. When Rivers and Manning, Eli went the top, right? Ben fell to what, 11? Okay. Pittsburgh didn't move. They sat there patiently and waited for him to fall in their lap. Is something like this going to happen every year? Like I said, I sat there the night before the draft, Field. I had Josh Allen projected in my Mock 5.0, which was not going to exist anymore. Not doing any Mock 5.0s the morning of the draft anymore. They're disgraceful and disastrous for me. I get down and everybody says, no, Josh Allen's not going one. It's going to be Baker Mayfield. Probably. You got to be kidding me, right? Josh Allen's not going one. He went 7th. So, I didn't even know the night before the draft what the heck was going on here. So, that's why I say, Field, could it happen? Could we be shocked, surprised, even the night before the draft, thinking we know what's going to happen and we really don't know? Maybe we can. But Drake May is going to be the interesting guy, because Jane Daniels is red hot. We know Caleb is going to go right there at the top. Drake May lost some of that luster, okay? Bloom was off the rose a bit based on what we saw late this past year, right? Where does he fall? I don't know. We got a long way to go to late April, but it's going to be interesting. And then J.J. McCarthy is the next quarterback. Where does he go? We talked a lot about J.J., right? Getting a real handle on him. Could you figure it out at Michigan? You couldn't, because it wasn't him carrying that team. But he's got talent, and Jim Harbaugh raves about this guy. So
where does J.J. fall
is going to be really interesting, Field.
Yeah, Mel, the quarterback four dilemma is going to keep me up at night all the way until we get to the draft, some 2.5 months from right now. But man, I'm just hoping, and I'm saying this right now, like just whoever starts to overthink it that needs a quarterback at the top of the board, don't bypass Drake May entirely, right? Like, there's so much to like about this player as a prospect, Mel, on top of everything that we have discussed. He's 21 years old, right? Like, think about the developmental upside for a kid that played 2 years as a starter. Like, he's got so much potential if you just put the right pieces around him to develop. I'm not talking about just wide receivers, like the right coaching staff to get Drake May to where he can be.
Let me ask you a question, Phil, because you're in Vegas and you're canvassing everything. You're talking to all your buddies, you know, everybody in Vegas. You're the man. You're the radio bro. You have not a minute to even have lunch or dinner, right? You can't certainly do anything at the opportunities, the options in Vegas. I'll get into obviously the gambling aspect of it. You don't fool around with any of that stuff. But in terms of the gambling part of it, when you talk about betting this game, gambling, betting on the Super Bowl, all the prop bets, prop opportunities that you have, and everything that's going on there, around all that is a game that also allows people to talk. And everybody has word on what they think, what they don't think. Have you asked anybody out there what the consensus is on the Bears and Justin Fields or Caleb Williams? What are the people you talk to feel about the Bears and what their ultimate decision will be, Field?
So, Mel, it is the third most discussed topic in Vegas this week. One is, one and two are San Francisco and Kansas City and whatever order. There is no order there. They're tied for first, right? Then you have the Bears and what they will or what they could do with Justin Fields and Caleb Williams. Yeah. I will say this. Other than Ryan Poles, the Bears general manager, and his inner circle, everybody else is just guessing. But the most prevalent guess from people that are around the NFL, that are here this week, is that the Bears are more likely to facilitate a Justin Fields trade and then take a quarterback number one overall, with Caleb, of course, as the, to borrow a Vegas term, odds on favorite to be that first overall pick. Okay. It's not that Justin Fields is far from a terrible player now, right? That's the reason why there will be a trade market for Justin Fields. And the hope for Chicago is to bubble up a market too, by the way.
Is Atlanta seem like the obvious spot, or is there another team or two, Field, that could make a move for Justin Fields?
So Atlanta is the team that everybody tries to dot connect with. So I'm going to keep their name in the hat, so to speak. The other thing that people talk about all the time, or have talked about this week when I've sort of canvassed options for Justin Fields, is they say Baker Mayfield can only sign with one team. Kirk Cousins can only sign with one team. Those are the two veteran free agent quarterbacks, Mel, that I think are worth whatever money they get paid, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of doubt. Those guys are starters. Once those guys are off the board, a bunch of other teams are saying to themselves, what do we do now? Like, Pittsburgh has said they're publicly behind Kenny Pickett. Are they really behind Kenny Pickett? What do the Raiders do? Does Luke Getsy, their new offensive coordinator, formerly the Bears offensive coordinator, think that the problem in Chicago was actually Justin and not him? Or does he feel like, hey, Justin's got a really bright future. We can do this together in Vegas. Could the Raiders be an option? I don't think the Bears would be willing to trade Justin Fields to Minnesota, or maybe they wouldn't be as interested in it. But if Kirk Cousins leaves Minnesota, do the Vikings all of a sudden want to make a play for a quarterback? All of a sudden, the market is going to shape differently, and you're going to have teams competing for very few options. Denver, what if they're saying to themselves, I know there's going to be a quarterback available at 12, but we don't think any of these guys, other than Caleb Williams, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels, are worthy of a first-round pick. Teams are going to become more desperate once free agency has run through the initial wave. That's my sense of where people are at.
Very good.
The fascinating 5, 6, 7 weeks ahead, Mel, and of course the draft.
I don't really have a handle on this game. I had Baltimore beating San Francisco back in August. So, Ravens are out, 49ers, Chiefs. I'm surprised. Like I said, we talked about this, Field. You are taking Kansas City over the 49ers. I'll go to this. You've talked there. Who are the majority of the people in Vegas that you've spoken to, Field? Who do they feel is going to win this football game?
I'd say the line that I'm hearing the most, Mel, is you can't really bet against Patrick Mahomes right now, can you? Even though Vegas is basically begging you to do that. I'll tell you, here's my difference maker of the week on Sunday, Mel. Harrison Butker versus Jake Moody. We talked about that. My pick for the game is 27-24. Harrison Butker, who had the longest streak in the NFL this season before he missed any kick, field goal, or extra point. Harrison Butker is the edge that Kansas City has over Jake Moody, who, big leg, talented kid, has made some big kicks this year, but also, as you mentioned earlier, has been inconsistent. That could be the difference in a game that could be decided in the final minutes of it.
Great point. With your Niners, you do not want it to come down to that, Field. You don't. Right, you just don't. And I look at this and I say the difference between quarterbacks and how they're viewed 50, 100 years from now, right? A lot of times it came down to a kick. It came down to Vinatieri in the snow to help Tom Brady. It came down to Harrison Butker after that 13 second got him in field goal range. He had to make that long field goal, right? Pressure situation to send it into overtime, and the rest is history, right? Tyler Bass, Josh Allen got him in field goal range to tie a football game. Tyler Bass yards, missed the field goal. Remember the Norwood, right? All these different things that we remember, field goal kicks that made or didn't make determine the future of a organization, of a quarterback. Now that quarterback is viewed, like I say, 40, 50, 100 years from now. So you're right. Harrison Butker has been, like, oh, I got Tucker here in Baltimore, Hall of Famer, right? Phenomenal kicker. Yeah, Butker has been unbelievable in pressure situations. Got to admit. So to me, you're right. If you're the Niners, you want to get that margin going where it doesn't come down to a field goal.
Yep. It'll be a fascinating game, Mel. We cannot wait. We are always fired up for the Super Bowl. I hope everybody enjoys it. Mel, I like our Thursday shows a lot because we get to go for basically as long as we want. I think we're up over an hour on this show, but safeties and Chiefs.
We're close. Look at the clock now. We're close.
Scenarios. We're getting there. So if you're watching on YouTube, you may have noticed I've managed to drink a full coffee and nearly a full water here. It's early out here in Vegas, Mel, so I'm still getting my caffeine.
I haven't touched mine yet. It's still over here. It's still full.
You're wired differently.
I even had my lozenger. I didn't need my lozenger today, so I got through it without my tongue in the throat.
Just in case. Mel, you are the best. Thanks, as always, for everybody who is listening to First Draft on the podcast or watching here on the YouTube channel. Tyler, our producer, big thanks to you as well. We'll talk to you guys again on Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern time on YouTube and 2 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. America always wants more Mel Kiper Jr. We'll see you guys then.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.